What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. We asked Dave Dombrowski, we begged, we pleaded for him to make a move this offseason, and you know, just frankly, during the winter meeting, so we could have something to talk about on the Phillies Today podcast, and he delivered. Kyle Schwarber is back in a Phillies uniform for 5 years, $150 million, and you know, I had talked this offseason just about the possibility of not having Kyle Schwarber on the Phillies. And I think that was something that I was more talking myself into more than something I, you know, maybe wanted to do. And look, I think there would have been a lot of interesting possibilities had the Phillies not brought back Kyle Schwarber. But now that they brought him back for 5 years, $150 million, I'm just really happy that this guy gets to play the rest of his career out as a Philly. He's a likable player, obviously, just in terms of what he brings from a clubhouse perspective on and off the field. And although obviously paying a DH that's going into his 33-year-old season, you know, $150 million over the next 5 years, it's a risky thing. But I think that what you're getting from Kyle Schwarber is you pretty much know what you're going to get. And I think that he's a player that's going to age relatively well considering, you know, the smoothness of his swings in comparison to Bryce Harper, who body we're already seeing break down a little bit because of the you know, violent nature of his swing and just the pure aggression that he has. He's already had back injuries and wrist injuries, as we know. So with Schwarber, I think it's the opposite. And I think the way he's able to take pitches and work at bats and just the high on base you sort of see year in and year out with Schwarber is something that would allow you to think that he'll age well. And I'm just very happy he's going to be a part of this team moving forward. And I do think that it's probably unrealistic to think at this point that they're probably going to sign another big-time free agent. And I expect JT Realmuto to be back probably on a, you know, 2 to 3 year deal at $15 million a year. And with that third year, hopefully, you know, a club option in case he, you know, falls off a cliff after a couple of years here. But I do think JT will be back. And I think there's a chance that they bring Bader back just depending on what they do in the trade market. But getting to that trade market, we're going to touch on it in depth here later in the pod. That's going to be the key to this offseason, is what Dave Dombrowski and Preston Mattingly and the rest of the front office do in the trade market here, because you've got your big fish free agent, Kyle Schwarber, which, again, I'm very happy about the Kyle Schwarber signing. I think there was some mixed reaction among Phillies fans just because when you talk about Kyle Schwarber bringing him back, you talk about bringing JT back, and a lot of people don't like the idea of just quote-unquote running it back with the same team that has obviously come up short in the last few years. But with Kyle, I just would be very surprised to see him really fall off here in the next couple of years, and we'll see how he does in his age 37 and age 38 season. But I do think that he is still going to be a very productive player over the next couple of years. And for Pete Alonso, who we're also going to get to in a minute here, him getting 5 years, 155, which is pretty much just a match deal, but he gets $5 million more. Like, I would say that Kyle Schwarber is a much better offensive player than Pete Alonso is at this point. So I think that at the end of the day, it's a fair deal for the Phillies, just considering they didn't go beyond 5 years. I was getting a little nervous that it was going to go beyond that, maybe even 6 years or 7 years, which I think that probably would have been too much for the Phillies. But going into last season, it was probably the Phillies were at three, Schwarber was at five, they were going to get to four, and Kyle Schwarber hitting 56 home runs, you know, you have to reward that production. And I think that give John Middleton credit. He brought out his checkbook once again, made sure that somebody who's beloved here and is a fan favorite and is somebody who clearly contributes to the success of the ball club, he made sure that he was back. And Kyle came on 94 WIP yesterday or 2 days ago and discussed the process of John Middleton coming to his house and wanting him to be a Philly still and trying to get him to come back here and asking what he thinks about the team. And, you know, that is one area where I think John Middleton probably could be the best owner in the sport in terms of not only having the pockets and the, you know, the stones to break out that kind of money, but at the same time, getting to know these guys on a personal level. I mean, we've all seen the Signing Harper documentary and what he did with Bryce and his wife and his whole family to make them feel like they were, you know, comfortable here and welcome in Philadelphia. And I think that his relationship with the players, in addition to the willingness to spend, is what makes him such a great owner. And obviously his love for the Phillies is what drives all that. But you have to give a ton of credit to John Middleton, because he never allows, you know, this team to sort of go through a pause here. You know, we don't want to spend because of the tax this year. We don't want to, you know, and no, that was the case a few years ago. But ever since they've sort of opened this championship window in 22, 23, they've taken the approach of, look, if there are guys who want to play here and who have had success here, we're going to pay them. And whether it's resulted in some bad deals like Taiwan Walker and Nick Castellanos, but it's resulted in some pretty good deals. Like Kyle Schwarber's 4 years, $79 million will go down as one of the better deals that, you know, has been signed here. And that's, you know, John Middleton's willingness to go get him and Nick Castellanos in the same offseason. So you hit on one, you miss on another, you'll take that typically. So really stoked for Kyle Schwarber to be back. He sent out a great post saying how excited he was to be back in Philly. Some stuff has come out just about him really wanting to get the job done here and how hard it is to win a World Series, but he is really looking forward to the challenge and hoping to finalize the job here. So very hyped for Schwarber to be back, and we will see how the rest of this offseason goes, because you got to be able to add to that. Obviously, I think most people would assume or think that JT is going to be back, and I would be very surprised at this point considering the makeup of the team, and bringing back Schwarber, it obviously means that you are competing for a championship in the next couple of years because this core is not getting any younger. So would think JT is back. And then it brings up the very interesting trade possibilities and scenarios, because when you move along to the Phillies offseason and what has to happen next and what can get fans really excited about this team, because I don't think bringing back JT and Harrison Bader in addition to the Schwarber thing, I don't think that gets fans like really excited for next year. I think fans will watch, and I think a lot of people will come out to the ballpark still, but I think that in order to get the real excitement going about the team, you have to get creative and bring in somebody who's on a relatively team-friendly deal that could potentially, you know, help bolster not only this lineup, but maybe defensively as well. And that is where I'm going to talk about a name who I really haven't talked about much, and that's Brenton Doyle from the Colorado Rockies. And I think that his name has kind of been brought up with the Phillies as of late. Now, he's somebody where I think that if they don't bring back Harrison Bader, there's a strong chance that they could try to get the Rockies to send over Brenton Doyle. And if you know Brenton Doyle, he had a really good offensive season in 2024 out there in Colorado. If you look at the home road splits, they're not great in terms of most players with the Coors effect. Don't play as well on the road as they do at home, and he was one of those players. But definitely had a down year offensively last year, and is somebody who maybe in the right environment, you get him with Kevin Long, he could potentially be a bounce back candidate, and somebody, if you could, you know, swing for not one of your top prospects, that would be somebody I'm very interested in. But if we're talking about giving away, you know, an Arun Escobar or a Gage Wood or somebody of that nature, obviously not Aiden Miller or Andrew Painter, I don't know how into that I would be. But for a lower level prospect, or just for maybe even some major league talent as well, if they want, you know, say even a Johan Rojas, they're interested in taking a shot on him, that's something I'd be definitely interested in doing, because I think he would provide stellar defense in center field. Like Harrison Bader loved his defense in center field. Brenton Doyle is absolutely on that level as well. He is a Gold Glove caliber player year in and year out. Still pretty young, on a cheap contract. So I think that the possibility of bringing him in is pretty strong. And I think he's somebody you could put down at the bottom of the lineup, and maybe without the pressure of being one of the better offensive players in Colorado, you bring him here with a lot of, you know, other productive offensive players and, you know, really productive bats, I think you could potentially get the best out of Brenton Doyle. And again, I'm definitely interested to see what the return would be from the Phillies, because that would sort of dictate my opinion on the whole thing. But he's a young guy. He is, how old is Brenton? He's 27 years old, so you're not getting any older in terms of your core there. And I just think he's definitely worth a shot. Put him at the bottom of the lineup. Put him in center field every night. You can feel good about that. And I think they do want to get better defensively as a team, because my feeling on if they didn't re-sign Schwarber was that they were going to try to get better defensively and maybe look at a Cody Bellinger and become a little more versatile on that end of the baseball. So I think that that's still probably something they want to do, and it's something that Preston Mattingly, the GM, has emphasized a little bit, that they want to get a little more athletic, and they're going to be able to do that with Brandon Marsh in right field instead of Nick Castellanos this year, who is going to get traded, and they're going to do that with Justin Crawford out in left field, who's an athlete himself. So having an outfield of Crawford, Brenton Doyle, and Brandon Marsh, well, maybe not the most productive offensive outfield. And we'll see how Justin Crawford does this year as well. But that would be a pretty stellar defensive outfield to be able to throw out there on a night in, night out basis. So that's the kind of the only new guy that's come up for me. I'm still very interested in Brendan Donovan, who, like Cody Bellinger, can play a number of different positions and is a left-handed bat, I will say. But at the same time, I still think you could put very much at the top of that order with Trey Turner and maybe another right-handed bat, you know, backing him up. So I think that Brendan Donovan's still somebody, and the Cardinals are clearly trying to sell some of their guys, whether it's him. Definitely, I don't have interest in Arenado. I know that they're probably interested in Alec Bohm because they're trying to get younger and they could use a new third baseman, but don't have any more interest in Arenado. I think he is certainly over the hill and don't have any interest in bringing in, you know, an older replacement for Alec Bohm there. So, but yeah, I do think the Cardinals are willing to sell. So I would definitely be interested in what they would be asking for Brendan Donovan. Another guy, Buxton, we've talked about, who would fit like a glove out there in center field and is making, I think, like $15 million a year, which is an unbelievable contract. And the only injury, the only concerns, of course, would be the injury stuff. And he's struggled to stay healthy in his career and has been somebody who, when on the field, is incredibly productive and is phenomenal in center field as well, which goes under-talked about just because his offensive production was so good last year. But he really is an all-around phenomenal player. And, hey, the Twins were selling guys off like, you know, it was like a fire sale last year. So they would definitely, you know, I think be interested in listening to offers for Buxton, especially considering his, you know, stock is pretty high right now coming off of a healthy season. And I think the Phillies would be a perfect fit for him. And it seems like he's willing to move off of the no trade clause thing, unlike during the deadline last year, where it seemed like he did not want to leave a minor league team in Minnesota for whatever reason. So yeah, so we'll see how that goes. And I think that Buxton is definitely a name that'll get thrown out there as the offseason moves along. We talked about, of course, Ketel Marte, who those rumors have been heating up as well. I think the Red Sox have been one of the hottest teams that have been mentioned with the Phillies and with a few others. So he would fit this team perfectly. And I feel like a package of Bryson Stott and like a Gage Wood or Rune Escobar would probably get that done. It's a steep price to pay, but you're getting an elite second baseman on a really good contract. And the only concern with Ketel Marte, as we've mentioned before here, is that he seemed to not be the most motivated guy last year and just had some issues out there in Arizona with that team specifically, which is why I think they're trying to get off him. He could probably just use a change of scenery. And I think you get him in this clubhouse with a lot of leaders like they have. I think he probably finds a way to, you know, turn that stuff around. So would definitely still be interested in Ketel Marte, but it's going to be a steep price for sure. You're going to have to give up probably one of your top prospects. And I'm interested to kind of off of that. I'm very interested to know what the thought process is right now from the Phillies front office in terms of who is more untouchable at this point, Andrew Painter or Aiden Miller. Because if you were to ask me this question all through last season, through the trade deadline, through everything, I would have said it was Andrew Painter, because he was the, you know, top five pitching or top five prospect in the sport, one of the best pitching prospects that, you know, we've seen in Philadelphia maybe ever. And they were obviously very hesitant to move off from the deadline, because I think Cleveland was really trying to get him in the Stephen Kwan deal, and that sort of fell through right as the trade deadline was happening. So they were clearly very hesitant to move off of Painter, and it just seemed like it was one of those things where it was like Daryl Morey a couple of years ago. It was when he said, you know, if you're trying to get Tyrese Maxey and prime Michael Jordan's on the table, we're saying no. So I think it was one of those situations for the Phillies, but I think that might have changed. And I'm not worried about Andrew Painter yet in terms of him being a really good major league pitcher, but I do wonder if he is going to be the star that we all thought when he was coming up through the minors and before the Tommy John surgery. And obviously, we're going to learn a lot in spring training. We're going to learn a lot early in the season, and you hope that it's a Sandy Alcantara type of situation where it just takes him a little longer to get his fastball back, to get his velocity back, and then all the secondary stuff sort of is able to be played off of that. But it's definitely going to be interesting to monitor, because I think that at this point, Aiden Miller could be the more untouchable prospect, given the phenomenal second half he had last year, given the fact that he obviously plays a premium position, could play multiple positions there in the infield. So I'm interested to see what would be the case there, and if they're even thinking about bringing up Aiden Miller early in the season this year. And he needs some more time in AAA. Obviously, he hasn't been there quite yet, but If he gets off to a good start in the minors, I would not be shocked to see them potentially say, you know what, let's let the kid play. And if he struggles, we'll, you know, send him back down, get him some more time. But if he does really well up here, that's a productive player that is young and on a cheap deal and can really help this baseball team. So would be interested to see what the how the Phillies view those two guys and who is the more immovable prospect out of the two, if that were to come up and say a Ketel Marte trade proposal or something of that nature. I don't think they would trade either for Ketel Marte. That's just my feel. That's no reporting or anything, but I would be interested because obviously Arizona is going to start with those two names. So that's it sort of on the trade front there. And a couple starting pitchers. Obviously the Phillies aren't really in the market for starting pitching, but I just think it'll be interesting to see where Tarik Skubal goes, where Mackenzie Gore goes. I think Mackenzie Gore could be sort of like the Lizardo of last year, where if you get him, you know, with the right pitching staff and with the right pitching coach, he could be one of those guys who sort of catapults himself into the top five lefties in baseball. And he was really good for Washington last year too. I mean, how would he strike 50 guys out on opening day against the Phillies last year? But so I think Mackenzie Gore, whoever gets him, could potentially get a steal there, considering Skubal's obviously the big prize. And feels like the Mets are going to be heavily involved in that. It feels like a lot of the major players, the Yankees, will be involved in that, and would not be shocked to potentially see him in a Mets uniform. And speaking of the Mets, I have to talk about it now because I mentioned the Pete Alonso deal, 5-155 with the Baltimore Orioles. Crazy that Pete Alonso is no longer a New York Met. Just between him and Nimmo, like, I'm running out of guys that I hate on the Mets, which I honestly kind of hate. And I still got McNeil there, though. I got Francisco Alvarez, who I kind of despise. But, like, I've always been a Lindor guy, so I don't hate Lindor. I've always been a Starling Marte fan, even though I think he's a free agent now, too. But, they used to have so many hateable guys. And now, you know, I sort of like some of the guys on the Mets. But, anyway, yeah, so very interesting from the Mets there. And I'm sort of thinking that they're probably going to be very in on this trade market, considering the farm system they have is really good. We saw McClain last year come up and be great. We saw Sproat come up and be really good. And they've got Carson Bench, who's a really good hitting prospect from Oklahoma State down there. So they've got the prospect capital to be able to make a big move like that. And Tyler Glass now is another starter that I've seen being shopped around from the Dodgers even potentially. So I think that it'll be interesting to see how the starter trade market plays out. And I have to think that the Mets would be big players in this because what are the Mets doing right now? Like, what is David Stearns and Steve Cohen doing? I mean, they signed Devin Williams to the 3-year, $51 million deal. And then Edwin Diaz, speaking of another Met that leaves, signs a 3-year, $69 million deal with the Dodgers, which, again, it's the freaking Dodgers, which is just absolutely insane. I mean, the rich get richer, and the Dodgers continue to sign some of the best players in the sport. And, I mean, last year they signed Tanner Scott, who was one of the better closers in baseball the year prior. He obviously struggles for a little bit. He had the personal stuff going on in the postseason, but no big deal. We'll bring in Edwin Diaz. Like, just crazy. But what are the Mets doing? Like, you basically downgraded. And look, Devin Williams could bounce back because he had a great career up to last year. And I think some of the expected stats for him last season in New York with the Yankees were a little better than what the actual stats were. But, I mean, why wouldn't you just bring your guy back for $18 million more? I mean, this is Uncle Stevie, I thought. Steve Cohen, like, he, I thought, has unlimited money and is able to, you know, bring all these guys in. Sign Juan Soto to a $700 million deal. So I just think it's really interesting to see what they're doing. And I don't know what their plan is yet, but it's very fun to see the Mets fans melt down on Twitter right now. And, you know, hopefully they continue to botch this offseason. But I have a feeling they have something up their sleeve, and I'm worried it might be Tarik Skubal. So we'll keep our eye out for that. So other interesting signings that I thought, but those were the biggest two other than the Schwarber one this week during the winter meetings. But Robert Suarez signs with the Braves, the former Padres closer who obviously gave up the Bedlam at the Bank homer to Bryce Harper. He signs with the Braves for 3 years, $45 million. And I thought that was another guy that the Mets could even be on because you lose Edwin Diaz, you bring in Devin Williams. They had bullpen problems last year and they traded for Helsley at the deadline that obviously didn't work. And they needed an extra arm in addition to Diaz this offseason. So I was thinking when they signed Devin Williams, I was like, okay, they'll bring back Diaz too and make it, you know, fortify the bullpen really there with two strong arms at the end. But now you have Devin Williams in your closer spot. And I don't really know what else they have in their pen. I mean, I know they have Ryan Stanek still, and they have a couple of other guys, but I just don't think that that is a pen they're going to come into the season with next year. So I thought Robert Suarez could have been a guy they went after, but no, he's an Atlanta Brave, 3 years, $45 million. I think that's, you know, honestly a pretty fair deal for Robert Suarez, who had one of the more interesting stories, you know, in terms of career arc. He was, I think, like a free agent that got signed at almost 30 years old and then had a ton of success, 22 through 24. So that'll be interesting to see. And obviously San Diego was going to let him go considering they traded for Mason Miller last year. So, yeah, newest Braves closer is Robert Suarez. So he will be in the division. We'll face Bryce Harper plenty. So that'll be interesting to see. And one other guy I wanted to bring up with the Phillies before we get out of here. And I've talked about tapping into the Japanese market over the past couple of weeks and just this whole offseason in general, just based off of, obviously, they go in, try to sign Yamamoto. He ends up going to the Dodgers. The Phillies haven't really ever in their history been involved with Japanese free agents just because, you know, of the geographical stuff. Because, you know, I think John Middleton, he could see talent from anywhere and want to go after it. But this Tatsuya Ime guy, I have his name right, Tatsuya Ime, he is a really interesting guy. 27 years old, right-handed pitcher from Japan, and he's expressed interest in not going to the Dodgers, actually, and would be okay with playing on the East Coast. He is somebody who I think would be perfect to break into this market. He seems like a really good competitor. Just some interesting stuff on him that I was reading about. Average fastball velo is 95.5 miles an hour, which is right around major league average, so no problem in terms of velocity. Really interesting arm slot when I was watching him. He's a pretty low arm slot, which in terms of deception, I think with that fastball could be really good. But the thing that ties it all together is he's a really unique slider in terms of the movement compared to other major league pitchers. Like, it almost moves the opposite way it's supposed to. And he got a ton of swing and miss on it over in Japan. And I think his stuff translates to the major league level, like, really, really well. So I would be very, very inclined to be able to sign him. And it seems like he is probably the top Japanese starting pitcher on the market right now. And I'm not sure he gets a massive, massive deal like Yamamoto does, because Yamamoto was a super young stud coming out of, you know, Japan, was the consensus top guy. And, you know, Murakami is probably the top Japanese guy this year. But of course, he, you know, is on the offensive side of things in terms of, you know, what you're going to get out of his production. So I think that this is a really interesting opportunity for the Phillies, though, because if you're able to get a guy from Japan here that has a lot of success at the major league level in a Phillies uniform, I think that would just open up the floodgates. And they really just need that one player to open things up and say, you know what, sure, it's not LA, it's not Seattle, which of course are closer to Japan being on the West Coast, but like, Japanese players can succeed here and Japanese players can thrive here. So I think that they need that one guy to sort of open the floodgates up and be able to be almost an ambassador for other Japanese players to say, look, Philadelphia is a place that we can succeed and we can thrive in. And it might not be geographically close to Japan like some of these other cities, but, you know, it's a great sports town. I think that and get other Japanese players here potentially, because it seems like that pipeline is not going to be stopping anytime soon. So very interested to see how his free agency goes. And hopefully the Phillies can be in on that, because I think that could really end up opening the floodgates in the future. So that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Once again, Kyle Schwarber is a Philadelphia Philly. 5 more years. We're going to be on 500 home run watch in a few years here. So that's going to be exciting. Excited to see him hopefully win a World Series of the Philly as well. So for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstein. Thanks for listening and have a good one, everyone. We'll see you.